You're listening to NativeTalk.net. Audio files are available online at NativeTalk.net, where you can download and listen anytime on your computer, mobile device, or join us live every week, where you may have already won $10 million. Be a part of the program by emailing us, podcast@NativeTalk.net. And now, your hosts, Cliff and Brandon. Yep, that's what you're listening to. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good morning and welcome to the NativeTalk.net radio program. We're so glad you could join us today. Email if you want to be a part of the show, podcast@NativeTalk.net. And you can always make comments through the Facebook page as well, which is facebook.com/NativeTalkRadio. And the phone line, 970-278-5791. Got Brandon here with me. It's almost almost a streak here.
I know. I'm starting to hit a run. I'm on a roll. I'm on a hot buttered roll.
How much money do you make doing this show?
It's Buffalo Butthole. You know the shape of a goose egg? It's like that.
Well, what? You're not making millions and millions of dollars?
Where you may have already won a million. Are we legally exactly allowed to say that, by the way?
It says may have. Remember the old Ed McMahon thing? He always said may have. That's how he covered his own butt. So, what do you think are the most highest paying professions in America today? Because I can tell you, it's not podcast host.
Professional athlete.
Well, yeah, but that's not a normal thing that normal people can get into.
You have to be born with talent. Muggsy Bogues seemed pretty normal. That guy made it.
All right, look. Have you ever been put under? Like where you're awake and then
once.
You're not. And how did that go?
It was like counting backwards from 10. I got to about 7 and then I woke up and 2 hours had passed and my nether regions felt a little disturbed. I don't know what happened.
What?
What?
The hell kind of a procedure were you undergoing?
I don't know, man. I don't get anesthesiologist from Craigslist. It's not a good idea.
Yeah, because you're putting your life in their hands. And in fact, they are the top paid profession in America today at an average of $258,000 a year.
An average means that's the middle, folks. So that means there are anesthesiologists, I don't know how to say the word, that are making more than that.
Yeah, in fact, the top 10 best paying jobs are all either doctors, some type of a doctor, or a dentist.
Yeah.
So, number two, surgeon, which is just short of $250,000. Dentist comes in at number 9. We've got our cousin Nicole, her husband's a dentist. Have you been up to their house?
No, I haven't.
Incredible. Incredible home. Because he's like a lead dentist, and he's got like dentists who work for him.
Oh, there you go. That's like a pyramid scheme with teeth.
Yeah, and they're doing quite well. So that comes in 9th at average of $172,000. Yeah, he's
what
beaten
a pittance.
That.
How do you even survive on that little amount of money?
Right. Lawyers come in at 15th at $136,000. Optometrists are way down at 22 with 115. And this one I thought was odd. Mathematicians make $112,000.
You know why?
How? What are they doing?
They're cheating with the numbers.
What? Okay, what is a... No, seriously, what is a mathematician? Hi, what do you do? Oh, why, I'm a mathematician.
Well,
okay.
Sir, how do you think we build anything or get to space or, you know, do anything that has to do with more than walking? You kind of need math.
Engineers. Those are engineers. Engineers do math. There's a lot of people, important people, who do math, okay? They do not express themselves as mathematicians. Making, what did I say, $112,000 a year? That's insane. You use math to do other things. Nobody just does math. Why, I work on problems all day, and they pay me for it. Oh, what's 5 plus 6? Oh, that's 11. Give me money.
That's not what I mean. I mean, like, you might have an engineer who can put it together and might need math to put it together, but to create the formulas that the engineers then base their data off of, you need a person who's a little more experienced than arithmetic.
Yeah, that's why engineers are top mathematician people,
no,
but they're not.
No.
Their job is not
wrong.
Math.
Dude, you're so wrong. Engineers put... Sorry, I cursed again. You're going to have to bleep it out. But engineers, like, put things together. They engineer things. They might solve problems and create prototypes. They're not creating the math formulas that they're then basing their work off of.
Who, whose job is it to come up with equations? That's stupid.
Mathematicians.
Okay, how do you apply for that job? We're looking for mathematicians. That's me.
Yeah, you know how you apply for that job? You go to college, and when you get so high up in the math, there's only like four people standing around. The guys just look at you and say, well, you're not exactly cream of the crop, but you're the entire crop. So come on, you're hired. Once you get up that high in math, there ain't that many people around. So that's where the hiring people are looking, is in that very small pool.
I've never seen a job... ad out there for mathematicians that just
did you ever get past calculus?
No, I never got past algebra 2.
That's why you've never seen a job for mathematician, Cliff.
Okay, when I got to algebra 2, I kid you not, okay, I got to algebra 2 in college, and it literally made my mind, it made my mind hurt.
Like algebra 2?
My brain hurt trying to figure this crap out.
Now.
Look, I passed it, but it was hard.
It was not.
It was hard.
It is not hard. You just didn't try hard enough.
No, it was hard. You're wrong.
I got like a 98% in that class, dude. You're full of it.
No, it was... look, the comprehension of like math that high is difficult.
Nope.
Okay, you're wrong.
Nope.
All right, let's do
this
our...
is so fun to listen to.
Let's do our weekly lesson on Pacific Northwestern tribes. But first, this letter came in from Jay in, I don't know where he's from, but it's not a part of regular old boring listener mail.
What? Listener mail's not boring. I like that these people write us.
I do too. But he's commenting on our food, the eating habits. What do we do? Clever cooking about last week. And he said, no, actually, it was about table manners. Remember we were doing table manners?
Ago.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. And he says, children eat first, then the elders, then the females, and then the best fit men eat last. And I pointed out to him that... hey, we may be talking about, you know, varieties of different tribes, and different tribes did things in different ways. And I sent him the link that I got my information from, and he says, actually, you may be right. And it did vary, not simply by tribe, but, but by region. And, you know, they had different intentions. Maybe they had one home, different practices were observed. But it gets a bit different when it's a big community function. I think he's saying that, like, when you're eating as a family, you know, mm-hmm. like a small family unit, it may have been done one way. And then if you have, like, a big party group where everybody's eating together, maybe it was, like, a different issue, you know. And
So just so I understand, you're saying that one family might observe different meal habits just based on what kind of meal they're having.
Yeah, exactly. He says he actually had a strong learning experience with this once. He was an invited guest, but he was also standing next to, you know, another guest. No words were exchanged, but apparently both of them were waiting for the other one to be fed. And so you're like, eh? You're like, you know, that old joke about you first? No, you first. No,
right.
You first. So they were able to laugh about it later. That be so it's not about like a certain order. It's just about trying to follow what your host's customs are, so to speak.
And I think that's a good way to approach any meal situation, is kind of look around at the other party goers for context. At least that's how I navigate my social situations.
Yes. And then Lance says, For your information, there are actually...
I'm sorry. All good emails start with, for your information, or just so you know.
Yeah. He even shortened it, FYI.
Oh, yeah. FYI.
There are actually 567 federal tribes, with the addition of the Paw Monkey tribe in Virginia 2 years ago. I looked this up. Absolutely true. They added one and another Virginia tribe. Remember last week we were talking about the various tribes and they're going to add six more. They added the first one in Virginia 2 years ago. And I'm amazed. If I'm going to be wrong, I'm glad it's because there's another federally recognized tribe that I didn't know about. So,
yeah. Yeah, and I don't even remember what I guessed at, but I was way off of that number.
You said like 200 something.
That was the amount of countries in the world, but I probably did say 200 something.
All right, so here's the list of topics that we can do.
I want the one on the top that's all scribbled out.
We already did that one. That's table manners.
Oh, all right. How about the one that's two under that starts with a C?
No, clever. We already did that one.
Oh, okay.
Come on, choose one that hasn't been crossed out.
Oh, that's what the lines mean. So let me get this straight. Out of this list, the ones that are scribbled out are the ones we already did.
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. In that case, I'll take the potlatch.
The potlatch. We already did that one. Come on.
All right. Oh, cedar canoes seems really cool. Let's do that.
Cedar canoes. You're such a jerk. All right. Now, in the Pacific Northwest, where do they get most of their food?
The ocean, the sea, the water.
Yep. And they would get out there because I don't know if you've ever done like lake fishing or, you know, you've been out to the Puget Sound. Can you imagine doing all your fishing just off the shore? How much you think you're going to get out of there?
So I can imagine it, and I would imagine that I wouldn't be having a great time. And that I would imagine that if another tribal member or a member of another tribe is out there on a canoe, I'd probably be watching him pull in a lot more fish than me.
Yeah, so you're going to probably say, you know, I should probably get in on this canoe building thing.
Yeah, I'm going to get on the ground floor of this one. It seems profitable.
So this is going to come as a shock to you. But with fishing as your major source of food coming from the Puget Sound and the ocean, strong canoes made better fishing possible.
I believe that.
And very quickly, canoe building developed into pretty much an art form. Canoe carvers were trained by their ancestors. You know, dad learns from grandpa, who learns from great grandpa, who all teach the new kid. And they teach them all to be expert carvers. And in the family of carvers, no one else was allowed to carve a canoe. So if you weren't a canoe carver, you're not even allowed to try. This was an art handed down from father to son, from uncle to nephew. And these canoes were not like the canoes that we see today that are holding, what, maybe four people at the most? Six? No, these things were huge, able to accommodate, like, many, many people.
Wow.
I mean, look, you spent some time out on the Puget Sound doing diving and stuff like that. Have you ever had a time where the water wasn't perfectly smooth?
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like choppy and you're going
huge
all over the place.
4 to 6 foot waves.
Now
for sure.
Imagine being out there in a tiny little canoe like we see today.
Yeah, you'd be bobbing around like a bobber on a fishing line.
Yeah. So they made them large enough to withstand these kind of large wave conditions. And of course, they were carved from cedar trees. Now, for those of you who aren't out, who haven't visited or don't live in the Pacific Northwest, cedar trees can grow over 80 feet tall, and we're talking easily, okay? And the forest, we're talking thick.
Oh, 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 green giants.
So there aren't very many branches on the way up. All of the branches are way, way up at the top. Now, that's still true today. Now, you've done a lot of hiking in the Oregon and stuff area. Is it the same thing down there? Are we talking thick forests?
Yeah, especially when it's like in the springtime and such, when the leaves are out, you can hardly see 10 feet. If you get off the trails and you go out there, you can barely see around you. There's so much tall, tall trees. And then because the branches are up so high, it enables like lower, shorter growing trees to fill in the undergrowth, and then like ferns and stuff underneath that. So it's like a solid wall of green in every direction.
So here's the way they describe it. And you tell me if this is accurate. A cedar tree is a tall, wide, strong pole of wood with a hat of green leaves at the very top.
I would call it more of a jacket or a poncho, but yeah, all right, a hat of green leaves, sure.
So they would use these things to build the canoes and also totem poles and all that kind of stuff. You can see how this stuff was a culture in that area. You know, if you've got these basically perfectly formed poles just ready for carving. So the natural shape of cedar trees makes them basically perfect into cutting into planks or splitting into two long sections, which is exactly what the early people did. So they would just cut these things down, split it in half.
That's my question. Like, are you kidding me? Did they sit there with hand tools and chip at that thing until it fell? Really?
Yeah, basically. So we're talking canoes 50 feet long and 8 feet wide. Okay.
Wow.
Look at your ceiling from your floor to your ceiling. Okay. That's how wide it was, and 50 feet long. When we're talking big canoes, these are big canoes. They could hold 20 warriors and 10,000 pounds of cargo at the same time.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to say or.
No.
Oh my goodness.
These things are massive. They also, of course, obviously, they carved boats that were smaller for like single families. Maybe you're going out for a family outing. You just want to enjoy the water and the sunshine. Maybe you want to visit some other tribes. Kind of like a personal vehicle, you know? It's like a bus versus a personal, you know, Pinto.
I like it.
So, you know, they had
747 versus a biplane.
Yeah. So this is an art, though. Okay. So they cut down the tree, then they split it in half. And the important thing was they could not crack it. So this is an art in itself. Then they had to burn. They used fire, scrape down the middle and begin to shape it with the fires. They would, you know, burn the middle and scrape out the charcoal and stuff. Once they got that far, they filled in the hole that they had scraped down the middle with water. Now, just as we talked about last week, where women would use hot stones to make water boil in their cooking baskets, they basically did the same thing to soften the cedar. And so they would fill the hollow with water, add hot rocks until it boiled. Then the cedar would be soft so they could begin to chip it out and carve and shape the canoe until they got they got what they were looking for. So they didn't like do planks and, you know, shape them the way the old shipbuilders did. We're talking about solid one piece of wood canoes. That's amazing to me that they could do that. I want to see one of those today. I would love to see one of those today. You should make one.
I can't make one. I'm not a carver, but I want to.
You could try. We weren't divers until, about a year ago.
I need to learn more now before I start jumping into it. But yeah, I want to at least see it done. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I would love to see one of those today. All right. Well, we got to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a moment with more stimulating Native Talk Radio right here at nativetalk.net.
You're listening to the nativetalk.net radio podcast. We're definitely not bribing you to listen, even with your great sense of humor. Not to mention your great looks. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Hi, this is Cliff.
And this is Brandon.
And this is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced.
Whoa, wait a minute. What?
What do you mean?
I'm pretty sure we're not the greatest podcast ever produced. I mean, have you heard of Serial?
No.
Cracked Podcast?
No.
Or Surprisingly Awesome?
No. Okay. The NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced that I have actually listened to. So visit us online at nativetalk.net and tell your friends to download a few shows because, well, apparently we need it.
Well, yeah, if you ever want to measure up with podcasts that are actually good, like The Bugle with John Oliver or WTF with Mark Maron or Hardcore.
Hey, this is Steve with thepeoplesammo.com. Do you enjoy the outdoor sportsman lifestyle? We've got the high-quality, reliable ammo you need from home defense rounds to outdoor enjoyment. So check us out at thepeoplesammo.com, where we hold these truths to be self-evident that all ammo is not created equal. Visit thepeoplesammo.com, where you can stock up on the quality rounds you deserve and shoot with confidence. Thepeoplesammo.com.
The NativeTalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon. We're out of control. Listen, before the government gets involved. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Welcome back to the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. Now, before we get into this, because I'm telling you, it's going to get dark here pretty quickly.
Hold on. Before you do that, just to sidetrack us, just because of our little liner there about good podcasts, I just want to throw a random shout out there to Dirty John. It's like a six episode.
Dirty John.
It's like a six episode true crime, almost murder mystery, but it's like real life events that happened just a year ago or whatever. And it's a really good, interesting podcast produced by, I think, the LA Times or something like that. And it's just a really good, you know, 5-hour listen. I marathoned through it in like 2 days. It was really, really good.
Are you saying you listen to other shows besides ours?
All of those shows I listed in the promo I've listened to.
I gotta boo that.
Anyway, so, Dirty John, for all of those that like podcasts, it's a good one.
All right, there's another one I wanted to mention. My kid Jason, he's been on the show a couple of times. He decided he needed to do his own podcast.
Ooh, so branching out.
He started he begged me for it, but he's got a website called jasonsworld.net, and he's posting like drawings of like the Titanic and Plants vs. Zombies, and he's doing podcasts not quite like ours because he can't fill time quite the same way that we can. His average about 3 minutes per episode.
What is he like 7 now?
He's 6 still.
Yeah, 3 minutes is pretty solid for 6 years old.
Yeah. So, and you've heard him. It's funny, man. It made me laugh.
Yeah.
So if you want to hear my kid and his 3-minute podcast, go to jasonsworld.net and click the little podcast section, and they're only 3 minutes. So, all right. What do you do? What happens typically at this particular time of year? It's winter. And what happens to the weather in the wintertime?
It gets cold.
Yeah. Are there places in the country where it's colder than other places in the country?
Say, is that a question?
Yeah, that's a question. Are there places in this country that get colder than other places?
So temperature varies due to distance away from the equator and continentality. So the further north you go from the equator, the less sunlight the planet gets, so it's colder. And the further inland you get from the ocean, the greater the temperature variance, because water changes temperature at a slower rate than rock. So the ground in the middle of Russia is going to get super, super, super cold because it's way up north and it's in the middle of a huge country far away from the oceans. That's where you'll find the coldest places on Earth.
Thank you for that very scientific explanation of cold weather.
Well, it's true.
What do you do if you're one of the people who happen to live in that area?
You wear jackets.
What if you don't have enough heat or jackets?
You burn the clothes that you have.
If you're burning clothes that you have, which are not very many.
For warmth.
Because in this scenario, you're also incredibly poor, all right?
I don't know, man. I would start some fires. I'd burn some crap up.
All right.
I'd create ash of the world.
Yeah, my first thought was move, but that's not always possible.
Well, if I'm poor, I'm not going to use my little feetsies to walk across the equator.
Well, up in South Dakota, the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation is it is the third poorest county in the entire nation. All right, there are only two counties poorer than the Pine Ridge County, all right, which is where the majority of it is, the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. And as temperatures drop below zero on South Dakota's Pine Ridge Reservation earlier this month, one 12-year-old girl felt she had had enough. She was tired of feeling cold in her home as the temperatures continued to plummet, which obviously they do often there. She'd had enough of watching her parents constantly struggle to scrounge up wood to heat the house, because that's what you mentioned. Go find some stuff to burn. So her parents are out there looking for things, but when everybody's looking for things to burn and the ground is covered in snow, I mean, it doesn't come that easy. Especially when you consider, you know, trees that are already up there, they're not always good for burning because you need aged wood. So, because you want wood to sit there for like a year to get all of the moisture out of it, and then it actually burns well.
Yeah, that's why most people don't wait until it's snowy outside to gather their wood.
Well, you know, it's not always that simple, though, is it?
I mean, it kind of is. You're alive in the summer, aren't you? So isn't it simple to collect the wood then and save it for winter with a little bit of foresight?
Not everybody's got that, man.
Look. I mean, don't you get it after you spend one frozen winter? Don't you go around summer like...
Oops, I'm sorry. I did not mean to clap that.
I agree with it. I like the round of applause, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you freeze once, you realize that you're stupid, and you do better next time, right?
Jimmy Tubles says that reservation life, especially in this area, it's a hard life to live.
Hold on. I'm sorry. I want to back up my previous comment. I didn't mean to call anyone stupid. I meant to say you made stupid choices. I think everybody, the smartest people, make stupid choices, and that's what I meant. I believe I make stupid choices on a daily basis.
Oh, we all do that. Definitely.
And that was one of them. So I just want to backtrack.
I appreciate you walking that one back.
Yeah.
So Jimmy Tubles says reservation life, especially around here, it's a hard life to live and it's a constant struggle. So, I mean, look, it's easier for us to say these things because we've got enough. But I don't know. Maybe it's just not that easy. All right. So,
well, I mean, and I talk about collecting wood. Maybe the wood all around has been collected, I don't know, sometime in the last 200 years, and they have to go really, really far to get wood. I don't know these people's lives.
Yeah.
You know, I just jumped to assumptions.
Because I've never been up there before. I do want to go up there and visit, but I haven't had a chance yet, okay? So this girl, she's just tired of waking up cold. She's tired of waking up hungry. So she went to the bathroom and tried to kill herself.
Jesus.
12 years old. Now, she wasn't successful, so that is a good thing, but suicides are at a record high in South Dakota, and they reached record highs last year. Oglala Lakota County, which is where the Pine Ridge Reservation is located, was one of five counties in the state with the highest rates of suicide. All right,
wow.
So there are five counties where people have just, they deal with daily depression, and suicide is tied in part to the devastatingly difficult conditions that residents face on a daily basis. So this isn't as easy as, well, let's just go collect wood, because there's so many things going on, you know, and if they don't have enough food, they're not getting enough sleep, you know, waking up in the morning and saying, why don't I just go spend 6 hours collecting firewood? It's not always an option if you don't have the energy almost to get out of bed, you know, and you want them to go out and collect firewood.
Mm-hmm.
There's no indication that suicides increase by any measurable margin during the winter, but local experts say that winter's relentless conditions can obviously lead to feelings of despair. 2016 study conducted through UCLA School of Public Affairs found that, and I'm sure this will shock everyone, there's a close correlation between poverty rates and suicide in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, if you're warm and well-fed, you don't want to kill yourself as bad as when you're starving and cold.
Yeah, it's like something that just builds up over time, you know? And finally, you just say, the hell with it. What am I doing this for? You know, why am I spending all of this time struggling? Per capita income, you're talking $9,000 per year.
Whoa.
Per year. And 80% of residents are unemployed. So,
wow.
So, you know, there's a lot of folks out there making less than that, because per capita, you take all the money in the whole county and divide it by everybody. If everybody
equally
got the same amount, $9,000. So just imagine how much people are struggling there. You know, people are getting hypothermia. They use space heaters and they end up starting house fires.
Yeah.
Children who don't have access to sufficient heat struggle to sleep at night. And of course, that affects them at school. I mean, have you ever stayed up all night and then tried to do something productive the next day?
Yeah, God forbid the teacher put on a video and turns off the lights. Good night.
Right? So they're not able to concentrate. The children are acting up in school. They're tired. Alice Phelps, who's principal of Wounded Knee School District, was talking to the Huffington Post, who did this story. And she says that we talked to them one-on-one, trying to find out what's going on here. And the bottom line is, they hardly slept at all the night before. They say, well, I didn't have a blanket, so I gave it to my little sister.
Good Lord.
And I was cold. I mean, in fact, in school, because you mentioned how they appreciate, you know, the warm, heated school, they say attendance is near perfect because they're guaranteed a hot meal and, you know, they're not freezing to death.
Mm-hmm.
They actually want to be in school because it's safe and their immediate needs are met. This is just one of the most heartbreaking things that I've heard in a long time. Now, the Oglala Sioux Tribe gets about $1.2 million in funding from the Energy Assistance Program, which helps, you know, families with their energy bills and stuff like that. Yeah, that's dropping this year a little bit.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. And the homes, okay? You mentioned about wood. So they've got a charity that basically goes around and collects wood and gives it to households that can't do it themselves. They pay these guys $100-$150. But they say that they go into these homes to deliver the wood, and they've got giant holes in the floor. And women who don't even have front door handles and use a rag to keep it shut. Yeah, no cold is coming in through that, right?
You know, if our government can spend over $1 million on a missile or whatever the going rate is, we can cut a missile here and there to fund these tribes, right?
Yeah. And they've got one-room homes, okay, broke down, terrible, not equipped to withstand freezing temperatures. And in this one home, you've got 3 to 4 families packed under it in one room.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you have walls like that, that actually would keep you warmer.
Yeah, so they start leaving their ovens on for heat.
Oh, that's not a fire risk at all.
No, they go sleep in their cars, which obviously raises the risk of carbon monoxide poisoning. They wrap plastic around their windows to help insulate. I mean, this is just horrible. So, you know, I don't really have an answer here, but public service, folks. If you there are charity groups that you can give to and help these folks out. I sent a little myself because story like that gets you, you know.
What are those charity groups?
Well, there's National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Now, I didn't highlight this as well as I really wanted to during the recording of the regular show, but I wanted to add this on real quick, because when you've got people suffering as much as the Oglala Sioux are and find yourself in a desperate situation just trying to survive, it's important to have someone out there looking out for you. Fortunately, there is a charity to help these folks out. It's called the One Spirit Charity, which you can find at nativeprogress.org. And what these folks do is go around and collect firewood, deliver it to people who need it. They've got a food arm, so people who need just basic food items, they get that stuff delivered. They also maintain a list, which you can find at okini.net, O-K-I-N-I.net. And they've got, I mean, just this month, I've got 9 pages of families who are asking for just the most basic items. Clothing for son and nephew, winter clothing and shoes, jacket and boots. I mean, socks. There's so many requests for socks here. It's ridiculous. Diapers for new little babies, backpacks for school. I mean, just these are things that people need that we all just take for granted, you know? And so these folks are saying, can you please help us out? All right. So if you get a chance, I encourage you guys to go to either okini.net or nativeprogress.org and help these folks out, because I definitely think this is one of the most worthy charities out there. I gave to the wood people so they can collect wood and give it to these folks. You know, that's who I gave to. But there's varieties out there. So.
You remember back in 2016 when there was a presidential election going on and you were like, hey, the first time President Trump starts doing things against natives, I will be the first in line to renounce.
I'm there.
So how you feeling about
that? I'm there.
Yeah?
All right. We'll talk about it a little bit more next time, but that'll do it for us today. We'll be back next week with more stimulating Native Talk Radio, available online at nativetalk.net. We'll see you guys next week.
This is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. Hey, we've got our bathing suits on, and we all agree our hosts have the best bodies. For radio, that is. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.